All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. All right, so let's see, what time is it? It's almost too late, but I guess not quite too late to go to our first guest here on the show today. It's John Cook from Gawker Magazine. Gawker, the website, anyway, I don't know if it's a magazine. But Gawker.com, and he's also worked as a reporter for the Chicago Tribune, Yahoo News, Radar Magazine, and Mother Jones. And he's got this article, How the FBI Monitored Krusty Punks, Anarchist Hangouts, and Organic Farmers Markets Under the Guise of Combating Terrorism. It's at Gawker.com, Terror Importlandia. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Sorry for making you hang through the last of that rant there, but...
Don't worry. It's very interesting. We do not have a magazine, by the way. We're digital only.
Okay. Well, that's
There's
good.
No money
Save the
anymore.
Lives of those trees. Oh, I hope I didn't just get myself investigated by the FBI for taking the side of a tree. Terror in Portlandia, and I love the little photoshopped image here of the FBI SWAT hostage rescue team killer with his black mask standing in the middle of a farmer market, but it's not much of an exaggeration, is it?
Well, no, the agents that were at the farmer's market were conducting surveillance, so they were plain clothes, sitting in a car watching people. But yeah, it's certainly true that the FBI at one point in Portland, the FBI office there was spent about 3 years as part of a very large nationwide effort by the FBI to target animal rights extremists and environmental activists. In Portland, they spent about 3 years investigating animal rights activists and environmental folks there in Portland. And they wound up doing things like, you know, literally sitting at an organic farmer's market and watching people. And there's a memo that I got these files to the Freedom of Information Act, and there's one memo that records surveillance that these agents took, tailing these people driving Subarus from the farmer's market to a protest. And there's no criminal activity, and they did not know the identity of the people they were tailing. They just found some cars and followed them.
Yeah, I mean, reading that summary, it sounds as though the one cop said to the other, look, two Subarus. Like, maybe that was meaningful. That was what caught their attention.
Right. Now, it could be that they had that they were only going on a license plate number. So they may have just looked for the car, that they thought they had some reason to follow a license plate number. The documents are redacted, so it's not clear, but it is clear that they did not know who was in those cars, and that the only thing those people in those cars did was shop and buy some organic bananas or whatever, and then go to a protest that, you know, was perfectly legal. And there's dozens of documents like this, and there's about 400 pages in this particular file, and there's just dozens of instances of, you know, informants who are sitting outside of quote-unquote anarchist hangouts. Mm-hmm. Reporting back what they saw, and you know, the license plates of cars that are parked in front of anarchist hangouts.
All right, well, I'm sorry we'll have to leave it here for the break, but we'll be right back with John Cook from Gawker.com. The article is Terror in Portlandia. The FBI is after your local hippies. We'll be right back. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with John Cook from Gawker, Gawker.com. And we're talking about the FBI. They had this investigation, Seizing Thunder, which I guess started out as Operation Backfire. Actually had something to do with criminal activity. I'd say it was a stretch to call it terrorism or even really a federal matter in a constitutional sense. Seems like local police stuff. But anyway, so the feds got involved in, you know, lefties setting SUVs on fire and that kind of stuff, hippie stuff. But then it moved into this other operation, Seizing Thunder, which became, let's just monitor lefties. And from reading your article here, John, it sounds like just run-of-the-mill lefty is a good enough categorization. If you're wearing a tie-dye shirt and some flip-flops, then you're under suspicion and there's a fed following you around somewhere.
Right, or if you're wearing, you know, all black and a balaclava or something, I mean, they were really interested in
well, but
anarchist.
That's all the undercover cops.
right. But no, actually, so
let's not be naive.
Right, Seizing Thunder was the name of this operation. It actually was before Operation Backfire. Seizing Thunder was one of there were in the mid 2000s.
Oh, I'm sorry, I had it wrong then.
Yeah, this started in 2002. This ran from 02 to 05, and in the mid 2000s, there were as of 2005, there were 150 federal investigations into what the Justice Department called animal rights and environmental terrorism. So the animal rights and environmental extremism was, after 9/11, elevated to the top domestic terrorism priority for the Bush Justice Department. This is what they decided to focus all of their domestic counterterrorism efforts on, was, you know, there were some serious crimes. There's arsons. There was a notorious arson in the mid-90s of a ski lodge in Vail, Colorado, that did about $12 million in damage. You know, some of these people, a lot of these people are actually, you know, breaking laws, as you point out. I think a lot of them are, you know, state matters rather than federal matters. But the federal government decided to get into this, and Seizing Thunder was based out of Portland, but there were 150 other ones just like it around the country. And Seizing Thunder actually was merged into something called Operation Backfire, which resulted in 11 indictments of extremists, including the people who pulled off that arson in Vail, Colorado. So there were actual, you know, law enforcement interests at stake here. But what happened is it metastasized into this, into agents just, you know, I think almost for purposes of make work, you know, like they didn't have the actual goods on the people that they were going after, so they just expanded things to just a ludicrous extent and literally were, you know, following around people because they're anarchists, which, you know, is not a crime. It's, and a lot of the stuff sounds like, you know, files from the 1920s and the Palmer raids or something. I mean, it's literally like a known anarchist hangout, you know, because there's people parked in front of a known anarchist hangout. The FBI is recording their license plates.
Well, and you know what? There are a lot of anarcho-syndicalists and anarcho-communists and, for that matter, anarcho-capitalists in America. None of them are hell-bent on some imminent violent revolution, and there may be there's probably more anarchists in America now than ever before, but they're not a violent threat to the state. They're simply an ideological one.
There's no criminal, there's obviously no criminal element to believing in, you know, in the tenets of anarchism. There's no criminal element to believing in you know, animal liberation.
I mean, I can see where back in the day reactionaries would say, well, send out the Pinkertons because there are hardcore leftists who are actually doing things, you know,
right,
waging a massive strike, which of course is against the interests of people with power or whatever. But in this case, I mean, what are they doing at all? Except hanging out at Monkey Ranch Books. They ain't doing a damn thing.
Right, and in terms of specifically focusing on the anarchists, I mean, the biggest potential threat, I think, would be that they would view as sort of World Bank protests and that sort of thing, the Black Bloc folks, which,
the cops,
you know,
there, yeah.
Again, you know, I don't know why, you know, it seems like it doesn't seem like a rational distribution of federal law enforcement priorities to focus on 18 to 24 year olds who may on one day at a World Bank protest 6 months in the future, you know, break a window. You know, I mean, it might be, you know, it might be a problem for the municipalities that are hosting the G8 or whatever these you know, events are, but it certainly seems like an odd law enforcement priority. And I don't see how it's a federal matter. I mean, one thing when I was looking through these I thought of is, you know, I guarantee you when the Occupy Wall Street documents come out, when everyone who's filed their FOIA requests about the FBI's involvement in policing the Occupy Wall Street movement, you're going to find a lot of informants and a lot of surveillance of those groups, because that's, you know, simply what they're doing. They're gathering, you know, information and intelligence on radicals who they feel may break the law. And I think the Black Bloc folks, to the extent the Black Bloc folks show up at these Occupy Wall Street movements, the FBI is certainly monitoring them and keeping tabs on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Yeah, I don't know. To me, the whole thing betrays kind of a guilty conscience. I mean, I guess I see what you're saying, too, that it's just make work. You have a government program like the FBI. They'll never scale back their own power ever, ever. They'll always find reason to expand and expand and expand. And since there never were more than a couple hundred Al-Qaeda guys in the entire history of the planet Earth, what are they going to do with all this stuff? They got to persecute somebody.
Right, they got to justify the jobs, and if their bosses are saying the most important threat domestically to our security is this, you know, group of hippies and anarchists, then they're going to follow orders and keep tabs on those hippies and anarchists and wait for one of them to commit a crime. I mean, the only evidence of an actual, in the 400 pages of this file that I got, and there were about 700 or so pages, I believe, redacted from it, so there's a lot more there, but the only evidence of an actual discreet crime that I saw was there was a little bit in there about someone who had keyed some cars at a car dealership with ALF, ALF, Animal Liberation Front, and we've got the Portland office of the FBI, you know, worried about who's keying cars.
Yeah, well, why not? It makes, again, this is what I was kind of wondering about out loud earlier on the show, was why not just nationalize every police department in America? I mean, if everything that happens is the FBI's business, crime or not, certainly these things that are obviously, you know, matters for the local sheriff's department, why even have a local sheriff's department?
Well, right, and I mean, and this file definitely shows an enormous amount of cooperation between the Eugene, Oregon Police Department and the Portland, Oregon Police Department and the FBI, an enormous amount of, I mean, basically the FBI became a kind of intelligence service for these local police departments. Mm-hmm. There's a great memo in there about where an informant had clued in the FBI to a planned anarchist march in Eugene, Oregon to protest the IMF. And of course this great nugget of intelligence came via a flyer that had been passed out by these anarchists who wanted people to come to their march. So it's not like it was a great secret, but the FBI clued in the Eugene Police Department, and there's a memo written by one of the agents saying, you know, we averted a riot. The anarchists had planned a riot in Eugene, and because of our, you know, fast efforts to communicate the intelligence to the Eugene Police Department, they were able to avert a planned riot, which is just, I mean, there was no evidence that there was going to be a riot. There was a flyer that these folks put out saying, come down, we're going to have music. There were bands playing. There's going to be a teach-in. It was going to be a protest, a First Amendment demonstration. And these FBI agents, I think part of this mentality of like, well, we have to show we did something. Let's say we averted a riot.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is, you read through this article and you think, well, what a waste of time and energy and whatever, but it doesn't sound like they were, you know, really persecuting these kids, prosecuting them all for, you know, federal pot possession laws or some kind of craziness. They were just going way too far in surveilling them. But to me, I mean, I don't know, I think it's almost as big of a deal because of the chilling effect, as Terry Liberty Parker would have called it back in the day, that once a hippie hears about something like this, he's less likely to engage in things like this, even if he really wants to. He might just go down to the creek today instead of going to the protest with the rest of you guys, kind of a thing, you know? And
absolutely.
It's the same thing with internet surveillance. People really are. It's not that they're terrified sweating, but it does occur to them, maybe I don't want to have it on my permanent record that I used these particular search terms before, you know?
Yeah.
Same kind of thing. So, anyway, pretty bad violation. Everybody, please check out Gawker.com, John Cook's article. Is called, it's got a couple different names, Terror in Portlandia. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Scott.